shy, quiet, reserved? Not so much. This is Gale on News Talk 1310 KFKA.
10:05 on your Wednesday morning, News Talk 1310 KFKA. Working from a piece this morning by Eli Stokols in Politico. When Colorado Republicans scrapped their binding straw poll as part of the state's March 1st caucuses, it looked like they were forfeiting their relevance in the GOP's front-loaded nomination process. Now they're back in the game. With a still unsettled three-way primary fight appearing to be headed for a contested convention, all of a sudden, Colorado has taken on new significance. You know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I referred to it. Many of you remember Bob Ross and the Bob Ross painting show. Oh, I just still love catching Bob Ross whenever I can. It's just I don't know. It's kind of like just so calming and tranquil, and how he would take a happy little accident and just turn it into something very special. And it seems to me that poor Steve House, who is head of the state GOP, took a lot of flack over this decision to scrap the binding straw poll at the caucuses. But as it turned out, Steve, it was a happy little accident, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say it was a happy little accident, although we're not completely happy about the fact that, you know, 500,000 Republicans or a million Republicans didn't get to weigh in. It's going to work out that our delegates are very, very important, but that doesn't take away the sting of a rule change that prevented us from doing a little bit more than what we had in the past. So.
And explain that again, just for our own personal edification, because the bottom line, this was something that actually stemmed from a rule change on the national level, right?
Right. The RNC, I believe, wanted to go down the path of making all delegates in the country bound to someone going into the convention, because I think the strategy would be, you know, you'd have a clear nominee, you'd have, you know, clear opportunity to start the general election early, because in typical years, you'd have a presumptive nominee earlier. It would eliminate, you know, battles and uncertainty. So if you were going to do a straw poll, you had to do it bound. And everybody thought the hope was that, you know, the 11 or 12 or 13 caucus states would do it that way, mm-hmm. and that there would be delegates allocated. But it put a huge legal and financial burden on the party to do that in a way that, you know, wouldn't have come back to haunt us. And several states are being challenged now in what they did. And I think it's as a result of that process.
Interesting, too, came across a piece yesterday by Megan Schrader saying that presidential hopeful Ted Cruz will be in Colorado Springs on April 9th addressing the state assembly. And indications were that Donald Trump and Governor John Kasich would be there as well.
Right now, Ted is confirmed. We've invited Governor Kasich and Mr. Trump. We're waiting to hear back from their campaigns for them to finalize it. You know, there's definitely an interest on both of their parts to do that. Once we get a final indication that they're coming, we'll put out a press release and notify everybody. But I would not at all be surprised if Ted is joined by Mr. Trump and Mr. Kasich at the convention on April 9th.
Interesting, at a town hall in Wisconsin last night, kind of an about-face when it came to the pledge that the candidate signed, a pledge ostensibly, in my humble opinion, that was primarily directed toward Trump, because people were concerned that Trump would go third party and if he didn't get the nomination. So they wanted to assure way back in the process that Donald Trump would support the eventual nominee. And now you've got the front runners backing away from that. I find that very interesting, because doesn't that go somewhat to credibility? They signed the pledge. Shouldn't they stick by it?
Yeah, it's interesting. The pledge, what you mentioned, was really a twofold pledge. One was, I would support the nominee, and the other is, you were talking about not going to a third-party run. You know, we've since realized, and I think a lot of people know this now, that there are sore loser laws in 40 states. So in 40 states, you're not allowed to go on a ballot if you've already run for one of the parties as an independent. So, and you can challenge that in court, and I'm sure if Mr. Trump were, not the nominee. He might try to do that. But generally speaking, you know, people who run for office on a Democrat or Republican Party ticket and don't win, don't end up running independent because of those sore loser laws. Yes, to the issue of, you know, them backing down on their pledge. You know, this has been such a strange presidential season. They say that in a town hall because they're fighting. Who knows what will happen a month after the convention, whether they'll, you know, jump back in and support the nominee, whoever that is. I think it's still open to see what happens.
1010, News Talk 1310, KFKA, talking with State GOP Chair Steve House this morning. Steve, wanted to ask you a little bit, because there's so much confusion out there. I've been watching the punditocracy and trying to get to the bottom of it. You've got these arcane, somewhat complex, some would say convoluted, complicated rules when it comes to bound delegates at a contested convention. And the states, individual states, determine, for lack of a better term, how long those delegates are bound, correct?
That is absolutely correct. State rules are not really state rules, but state party rules and bylaws determine how that works.
So take us through a contested convention, because they talk a lot about the last contested convention. Was it 76, 80? Talking about that convention, but actually it wasn't contested because it was resolved on the first vote. So my understanding is that on the first vote, the delegates, the bound delegates, are committed to the candidate to whom they are bound. Second vote, I believe 58% can desert, can go to another candidate. Third vote, 80%, and after that it's just kind of open season. It's a free-for-all, right?
I think those numbers are basically correct. I'm not sure if it was, I think it was 57% and 85%, but you may be more accurate than I am.
Close enough.
The reality of it is, and there's a little nuance to what's going on right now, which is you probably saw today Marco Rubio has sent a letter to the 21 states where he's won delegates, asking those states to hold his delegates for him, even if their rules allow the delegate themselves to vote on the first ballot. They published a letter to Peter Goldberg. Peter's a friend of mine. He's the chairman up in Alaska. You know, I think they're going to try to honor Marco's request. So now you're looking at, you know, 300 and some unbound delegates on the first ballot. Maybe it's only 150 if Marco gets to keep his delegates. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going to happen even on the first ballot, let alone, you're right, 55% of the states allow, or 55% of the delegates are allowed to be unbound on that second ballot, which, when you think about that, that's enough to win the election.
You would think.
By itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. What about the thought, and there's been a lot of conjecture about this, and I don't know, I think it's outright paranoia, but then that has been kind of a driver of this entire cycle. As you alluded to earlier, it's been strange, which would make you the master of understatement, because it's just been downright bizarre. But what about the thought, Scott Walker, I think, came out and said that don't be surprised if the eventual nominee is not one of the three running. There's been a lot of conjecture that, who knows? I mean, maybe Paul Ryan will pop up as the nominee.
Yeah, personally, I hope that doesn't happen, because I think that'll create so much stress for the party, for the nominee.
Wouldn't it be a disaster? I think it would transcend stress. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you could label it a potential disaster. I mean, you know, you go back to, you know, the most popular discussion today is the 1860 Lincoln situation, where he was on the ballot, but the ballot rules were different. He didn't win until the third or fourth ballot, and he clearly was not in the lead when he went into it. You know, the rules are a little bit different today, because you have to qualify to be on the first ballot to get nominated. Those rules are subject to change before the convention begins. So that's going to be a huge, huge, intense point when you sit down with the Rules Committee and say, is Rule 40, eight states where a majority of delegates are necessary to be on the first ballot, still something you want to apply to this particular convention? All of those things come into play, but I do not want to see an outside candidate come in and be nominated.
I just think that would be the worst possible thing that could be done because of its overall impact on the electorate, because it sends a very clear message. I was laughing earlier this morning about a headline in the New York Daily News that essentially said on the Democratic side, they just figured out that the system's pretty well rigged for Hillary Clinton. I'm like, shocker. And I would just hate the same thing to translate over to the Republican side. But unfortunately, there's just enough speculation and conjecture out there that it's a cause for concern. Yes, there are overarching regulations in place, but as you alluded to, there are committees and that meet before the convention. And even their membership is chosen just before the convention that determine whether those rules are in place for this particular convention.
Yeah, if you think about the process, you have all of that, right? So convention rules apply from the beginning of one convention to the beginning of the next.
Mm-hmm.
So the convention rules that were in 2012 expire essentially at the very beginning of the 2016 election. You have that. You have states who have winner-take-all scenarios where delegates are elected after the winner-take-all, and they may or may not support the candidate they're going to be forced to vote for. You have states where open primaries helped elect delegates, where delegates were actually elected by people that weren't Republicans to support a Republican candidate. The potential for that all to get messy at this convention because we have a contested convention possibility is really significant. And frankly, my biggest concern, if it's Hillary Clinton versus somebody who isn't one of the current candidates, voter turnout could be really low, hurting every
sure.
other candidate in our races.
Absolutely, because this race is so much more than the presidency. We're talking all three levels of government here, and we just saw yesterday what a 4-4 Supreme Court actually looks like.
I know.
Scary stuff. Really is.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you really think about it, I mean, if you end up with a liberal Supreme Court, and I know I'm a conservative, but I believe this to be more true than wishful thinking, and that is conservative Supreme Courts play defense for the Constitution. Liberal Supreme Courts go on offense against it. And if we allow a liberal Supreme Court and they mess around with the Second Amendment or anything like that, we're going to have a level of anger and dissonance in this country we haven't ever seen. Well, maybe haven't, you know, not that high because there was some stuff in the 60s that was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is people will be very, very angry. And this is critical that we get this done right.
Well, and I think that is, again, the primary point. In Ben Carson's rather interesting endorsement of Donald Trump, first he says he's two people, he's the intellectual, he's the entertainer, he walks that back, then he comes out and says something to the effect of, well, it's only 4 years, we could do a lot worse. But it's fascinating to me because on that latter point, I believe Ben Carson is accurate when it comes to the presidency because what's more important is the direction of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, no question. I mean, a president does last 4 or 8 years. Supreme Court's the way they're structured last decade. And it really is so absolutely critical. It's just like the Senate. We've got to win the Senate because mm-hmm. if we don't win the Senate and we do win the presidency, we're still at risk on the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The stakes are so high. Steve, thank you for all of your time, for being so gracious this morning. Dinner leading up to the State Assembly. Tell us a little bit about that.
So we've got a dinner the night of the 8th, on April 8th. We call it the Centennial Dinner. Our keynote speaker will be Ken Cuccinelli from Virginia. Cuccinelli is a great speaker. He is working on behalf of the Cruz campaign and accepted the invitation. We would certainly have, you know, representatives of the Trump and Casey campaigns speak as well if they come forward. But it should be an interesting night. We're also going to feature a very, very powerful educational speaker from a classic academy because that night, in my mind, also has to be a lot about what I think is the number one issue in the country as well as the state, which is how do we fix education so the American dream is real for the next generation.
Absolutely. Where can we find out more information about the dinner and the assembly?
Colorado, it's actually cologop.org.
Steve, again, thanks for being so generous with your time. Not to put you on the spot, but who can beat Hillary Clinton?
I think any of the three guys that are still in the race can beat Hillary Clinton because because she has trouble ahead. There's no question she has trouble ahead. And the enthusiasm gap for Hillary Clinton, the number of people that come out to vote, it's just been such a downer for them from an enthusiasm perspective. They're all waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yeah, I think ultimately. Yeah, I saw a poll where they asked that specific question: what is your enthusiasm level for the candidates? I think Hillary's was around 17%.
Yeah, you take that, and then you take the Bernie Sanders voters who have said, I think it was a third of them, or a little more than a third of them in a poll said, if he's not the candidate, we won't vote for Hillary. And I think that comes down to that.
Wow. It'll be interesting, sir. Thank you, as always, for your time. And look forward to catching up with you again as the process unfolds.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Steve House, State GOP Chairman. Your thoughts this morning, 353-1310, 877-353-1310. News Talk 1310 KFKA, where it is 1020.